Hi, Sam here. So today on Insight, we're doing something a bit different. The School of Physics and Astronomy here at St. Andrews approached us wanting to work together to produce an episode on mental well-being. This is a really important topic to discuss, and we were really keen to get involved. In a 2014 NHS survey, it was found that 1 in 6 adults in England had a common mental health problem in the week prior to being interviewed, and in that same year, 19.7% of people in the UK aged 16 and older showed symptoms of anxiety or depression, which was a 1.5 increase on 2013's percentage. Beyond that, university can be a stressful environment to be in, and so ahead of exams and Mental Health Awareness Week, which this year begins Monday the 13th of May, we sat down with two pairs of one staff member and one student each to discuss mental well-being. We hope by listening to this episode that it benefits you, maybe by helping you realise that you're not alone if you're a student with exams or wanting to go into academia, or by helping educate you on mental well-being or mental illnesses if it's something you're unfamiliar with. Thank you very much for listening. You're listening to Insight, the University of St. Andrews Student Physics Society's podcast. I'm your host, Samuel Avery. Join us as we journey into the lives of St. Andrews academics, discovering their passions, inspirations, and motivations. So for our first staff student pair, we welcome Dr. Vivian Wild and Glenn Hunter. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So can I first ask you both about your experiences on mental illness or poor mental well-being, either personally or that you've witnessed in academia? Vivian, first, please.
Yeah, so I guess I was very fortunate early on. I suffered from imposter syndrome, but other than that, I didn't have any major incidents until when I arrived in St. Andrews as a lecturer, and I suddenly stopped sleeping. And that wasn't fun and has taken me many years to sort out. But I have seen it also all the way through my career in other students, undergraduates, postgraduates, and postdocs all the way through. And it's always very sad to see people that are not reaching their full potential because of anxiety, stress, other problems.
Okay, and Glenn, could you tell us a bit about your experience?
So I suffer from depression and anxiety myself, and it impacted me during my second years of study. And I do see it through, like Vivian said, in other students within the department, and it can have quite a large toll on our ability to work and everything else.
Okay, and you're in fourth year now?
Yes, I'm in my fourth year.
Is there anything about academia or academic environments that impacts on your mental well-being?
I find that generally for me anyway, it's stress triggers. So whenever there's times of like big deadlines coming up, exams, that's when I tend to have like mostly my low mood. But my anxiety does sometimes play up. It does build up, and then it just kind of explodes in a sense. But I do find it is generally around times of where there are like big important deadlines and yeah.
So it's a combination of things, but academia can be one of those factors.
Yeah, definitely. There's times where I'm at home and I still have these kind of low moods. I could be away in a different country and still have these times, but academia does come up as well.
Okay, and Vivian, these sort of similar stresses were exams and deadlines. Is it something that staff also find stresses them out and they have to deal with?
Yeah, I think it's slightly different for staff. I certainly have found it slightly different. We don't have the exam stress, and we don't often have the deadline stress. But I think there's two things in academia that are common to all levels, really. The first one is that we are all high achievers. All of our students here are high achievers, all the staff are high achievers, and therefore we have extremely high expectations of ourselves, and we put enormous amounts of pressure on ourselves. And that's something that's common throughout academia. And the second thing that I think is really important is the amount of independent working that we do. And that actually gets significantly more the more senior you get. And the more senior you get, the less feedback you get. So as an undergraduate student, you're constantly taking exams. So that gives you some sort of feedback of how you're doing. But you do get feedback. Whereas when you get to, for example, a MPhys project, you get given a project with how long is a piece of string? Is the answer when you ask, am I doing all right? And a PhD project, which can be 3.5 years of that. And that's when people really start to see lots of people suffering from this lack of constant feedback. And that's, I think, a lot of us have a lot of underlying anxiety.
So it's not necessarily like specific events like deadlines, but it's sort of similar characteristics that carry through in academia that are really triggering. So the university does provide support for mental well-being in various ways, and for students, that's student services and Nightline, but what are some coping mechanisms that you have used to help improve your well-being in the past, Vivian?
Personally, hobbies is the way I've always tried to approach it. So I think that can be exercise if that's your thing. That's my thing. I like to go for a run. But it can equally be computer games, TV, whatever. You know, don't feel if exercise isn't your thing, then, you know, that doesn't mean that you're going to be doomed to a life of mental illness. So the other thing is to book classes. One of the things about you know, if TV is your thing, then it's sometimes difficult to find the time to do it. Whereas if you have a class that you go to externally and you've paid for it, then you are much more likely to put your books down or put your computer down or, you know, and go and do that class. And certainly as a postdoc, when I found that I was working ridiculous hours just at my computer all day, every day, having something that was booked at sort of 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening that I just had to get up and go to, that was very, very important to me. And the other thing is to talk about it, which is obviously much easier said than done. Many of us don't talk to our families, even our closest people that are closest to us, we find it very difficult to talk to. But perhaps someone that's a bit further removed, you can find people that are very sympathetic. And certainly within this department, you will find people who are willing to talk to you.
Okay, so it's reaching out to others and also putting your energies towards sort of positive things then, yeah. And Glenn, as a student here, are there any support systems or coping mechanisms that you can share that have really helped you in the past?
So going from like Vivian's point, I generally try and find things that I can do or not involved in my studies. I like to sing a lot whenever my voice is not rough at the times. I enjoy gaming. I actively go to different society events to interact with other students. And I find that talking a lot also helps as well. It's one of the biggest things I've learned over my years as a student is that you do, especially in the physics department, you become this kind of tight-knit group of friends and family that you're all going through similar stresses and worries throughout your degree, and talking to them and realizing you're not quite alone in that often helps as well. And you can also give advice to each other and ways of dealing with it, discussing coping mechanisms. I've also used student services in the past. I've both been for counselling and, I can't remember the exact name of it. It's basically where they try and teach you about like ways of bringing yourself out of like the bad mindsets you can get into. And those have been quite effective in the past as well. But yeah, I'd say biggest ones is finding time to do something that you enjoy doing that can take your mind off of the workload that you're on, and scheduling that time in. There have been times in the past where I've just not had that time, and as a result, my low moods come in, anxiety builds up. When I do make the time for it, it often helps a lot, and I feel a lot better about the things I'm doing and where I am in my life.
So one of the fantastic things then about St. Andrews is the range of student activities, so really getting involved in that community and also utilising your community and student services, which is very commonly visited by students during the course of their degree. Glenn, is there anything that you think that it's important for the university and staff members to know about student mental well-being from your experiences in your undergraduate degree?
So my experiences so far have been quite positive. They are very understanding of what I need in terms of my support. But there are times where it feels as though, like we discussed earlier, it might be hard to kind of approach people. And for me, it took me a while to go and approach someone to say, hey, I'm struggling with my studies at the moment or with my mental health at the moment. Can I talk to you? That step to go and approach someone about it, it was a very big one. And it was a very impactful one as well. And it's now gotten me to the point where I can actively go and speak to members of staff and say, I'm struggling, what can I do about it kind of thing. So in terms of regards to like what the university and staff members to know is that every student is different. Everyone has different forms of mental health, and it's like recognizing those differences and knowing how to support those differences can benefit the students so much better. Don't get me wrong, we're doing a fantastic job as it is at the moment, and the services we have available are fantastic. It just, there are different things like imposter syndrome, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorders, and other stuff that can cause an impact on students' experiences at university.
So it's kind of keeping up that standard, that high quality of support after they are approached, but being open to the fact that different people need to approach them at their own pace and in different
ways. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Vivian, in conversations about mental well-being, there's a real emphasis on letting people around you know that you're not alone. And that's something we've talked about today. Has there been a positive trend towards open conversation in academia over the course of your career?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So if I think back to my fellow undergraduates and postgraduates, who just retreated to their rooms and that was the end of it. You never saw them. To what I see in the students in St. Andrews, the real support mechanisms that go on, looking after each other as a start, but also the support that the university gives. Now, I can't easily compare because these are different universities, mm-hmm. But certainly at the time, I remember phoning up the equivalent of student services in another university and being told that there was nothing they could do unless that student contacted them. And that's certainly not the case now. If I raise a concern about a student, then the student services will do everything under their power to try and contact that student. So I think there has been a huge positive shift, both in the openness in the press in general, the awareness in society that this is a problem has obviously really helped. And I think our students are a microcosm of what's going on in the broader society.
Fantastic. And that's exactly what everyone wants to see. So just to round off this discussion, Vivian, is there anything you would like to say to students or staff who may be suffering from mental illnesses or poor mental health at the moment?
Seek help early. If there's something that's worrying you, go and talk to student services or to occupational health. Both of them are extremely good services. You don't have to wait for the NHS within the university. We are very, very privileged to have both of those groups helping us out. So if there's something that you'd like to talk through, often just by setting up a meeting, these problems can suddenly vanish. So just going to talk to someone as early as you possibly can.
Okay, well, thank you both, Vivian and Glenn, for this incredibly candid discussion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So our discussion now is with Dr. Jonathan Keeling, Director of Postgraduate Studies here, and Amy Sudders. Thank you both for joining us. Can I first ask you both about your experiences of mental illness or poor mental well-being, either personally or that you've witnessed in academia? And Amy, go first.
So I have struggled with mental illness since I was about 14 years old. Since then, I've been diagnosed with depression and anxiety. When I was 17, 18, then I also developed an eating disorder, so sort of the big three. I think a lot of those have been stress-induced, not necessarily just by university, but it certainly doesn't help. So yeah, in a pretty good place to talk about mental health, I think.
And Jonathan, yourself?
Yes, so as postgraduate director, I guess I've seen quite a lot of cases where students have been in distress. It's really been a spectrum of things, from diagnosed conditions to various forms of anxiety, and also quite often various physical symptoms that people might not necessarily associate with mental health, but probably are stress-induced, things like migraines, things like sleeping badly, panic attacks, stomach pain, and so on. There are particular things that do seem to induce stress a lot, things like giving talks or things like writing a thesis or writing a report along the way. But also there are background things all the way through university that can induce stress and can induce anxiety.
And so, Amy, you said that, you know, university doesn't always help with various mental well-being things. What factors in academia do you think there are that impact on the mental well-being of students?
So I think in academia, it really does break down into two main camps, personally. The first is stress. Stress-induced burnout is possibly the worst thing that students can experience. It makes you non-motivated, you have no interest in your classes anymore, and that's all just from being extremely stressed about, it could be deadlines or it could be your own academic performance, there's a number of things it could be. As well as stress, I think the second important thing is the highly competitive atmosphere of an academic environment. People don't like to talk about their failures very much. So when one happens to you, you feel like you're the only person who's ever failed at anything. And if you're not hitting straight first all the time, then suddenly, what was your degree for? You know, why am I here spending 4 or 5 years of my life doing this if everyone else just seems to be coping better and doing a lot better than me? And yeah, I think that competitiveness is something that needs to be looked at, because we all should be supporting each other a lot more than we are, I think.
Mm-hmm. And these are obviously issues that you can point out and you can say, here it is, here's something we need to work on.
Yeah.
So I actually asked you to prepare a question for Jonathan as well.
Yeah, so Jonathan, is there anything specific to a scientific career path that can enhance mental health issues, and how could society mitigate those?
So I think that there definitely are both things that you can do to help yourself, and also as people continue in academia, it's often difficult to recognize the transition from a point where you are the recipient of what's going on to actually having control. And I think For instance, PhD students, when they start giving tutorials, often miss this fact that now they're in a position of some power and therefore able to do something themselves to help other people. And actually, as your career goes on, because you're staying in the same kind of environment, it's very often easy to miss this transition and still think of yourself as just an overgrown undergraduate and forget that you now have power and responsibility. So on that side, I think what I really want to say is to think carefully about not just what you are doing, what you're demanding of people, what you're asking of people, but what example you're setting by your own behavior. And that means both showing good examples of how do you respond to the constant judging, the constant feedback that occurs in academia, how do you avoid personalizing it, how do you approach it with a growth mindset of saying, actually, are there things that are right about this criticism, or are there things here which are just completely off base and that this is just someone being negative for the sake of it. In terms of approaching your own mental health, I think the key thing I would try to suggest is that there is a cycle in academia of working very long hours and burning out and therefore working ineffectively and therefore working even longer hours. And there really needs to be ways to break that cycle, to recognize it before it becomes a problem and to recognize it in yourself and to see when you're starting to get into that sequence and then go and do something else, go and take a walk, go and talk with friends, do something consciously that is a break from work to avoid that sequence of working to exhaustion and then feeling completely washed out because of that process.
Mm-hmm. So it's people who move through academia, they need to bear in mind where they came from and try and support people at the stages that they've passed through and also setting aside time for yourself.
Yes, and I think there is also a sense that academia is full of insecure overachievers, people who have got there because they worked really hard and they feel that they have to work really hard to continue. And that can set an atmosphere where other people feel that's what they have to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Jonathan, obviously you support a lot of students, but Amy, do you have any recommendations for your fellow students on how to cope with poor mental well-being, or are there services in the university that you know of and you think are particularly useful?
Yeah, so the best piece of advice I ever got with regards to my degree, it's not necessarily a piece of advice I take 100% of the time, but I think it's still an excellent thing to say, is that you should treat your degree like a 9-to-5 job. Don't work ridiculous hours. Don't be staying up till 2 p.m. Don't be staying up till 2 a.m. fueled by caffeine and stress. You know, take that time. Once you're finished in the evening, make that you finished in the evening. Do exercise. The effects of exercise on the brain are incredibly positive. And as physicists, we're not massively known for getting out to the gym in the most part, but it's incredibly helpful and it's something people should do, even if it's just going for a walk on the beach or going and playing rounders in the sun, anything like that. So yeah, look after yourself as you would if you were working. Don't treat your degree any different to how you would an employer kind of thing. In terms of services around the university, there's plenty of extremely helpful ones. Student services has helped me countless times in the past. They're always there and they will always do what they can. It's not always necessarily going to be a 1-second fix to your problems, but they are extremely helpful when it comes to helping with issues in your degree, that kind of thing. Nightline is always there to talk to. They're there every single day. The halls are open. You can call them. You can instant message them. Incredible service with amazing volunteers around the university. And talk to people in the school. There's plenty of staff members that have really helped me when I've been going through terrible times just by sitting me down and explaining that it is okay right now to not be okay.
So it's really looking after yourself. You can take steps to do that and then also making use of these fantastic services. So Jonathan, I think you used a phrase there, insecure overachievers, and people couldn't see obviously, but Amy and I both nodded when you said this because one of these recognized issues in academia, and one that tends to affect students even more in postgraduate studies and postdoctoral positions, is imposter syndrome, where people don't feel deserving of their achievements and they sort of lack confidence in their own knowledge. So is that something that you've personally experienced, or why do you think it's so prevalent in academia?
So I'm not sure whether it's something I can say I've personally experienced. There have been times just after I've had a grant rejected or a paper rejected or had both happen in the same day when I've really felt that, but it's not a thing I really have direct experience of. I guess in part because I am white and male and look like what a lot of physicists have looked like. And so I recognize it's particularly something that people suffer from if they look around and they don't see other people who look like them. I think one or two reasons why it's so prevalent is that there is a lot of being judged in academia. It's not just when you write your thesis or write exams as an undergraduate, but every time you submit a paper, it comes back with comments from referees which range from useful to just vindictive. Every time you write a grant proposal, it will come back with judgment, and the success rates are quite low, so that a lot of academia consists of being repeatedly told this wasn't quite good enough and not recognizing that that's what everyone else is going through. Because what you mostly see is people's successes. You see the 1 in 10 grants that do succeed, not the 9 out of 10 that people had to write before that. I think also it's often the case you don't see the work that went into a finished product. But when you read a paper, it looks like they just understood this problem and it was completely clear from the beginning. And that should be what a good paper looks like, because they shouldn't force you to go through all of the blind alleys and dead ends that they went through in order to do their work. I think also you see academics publishing 10 papers a year, and that makes it look like they managed to do things in 1 month. But what you miss there is that actually that can be that there were 10 projects, each of which have been running 2 years, 3 years. I have projects that are unfinished that I started in 2015, but no one will really be able to tell from the outside how long something took before you got to the finished product.
Okay, so a lot of it is sort of the scientific process being a double-edged sword in that case. Do you have anything to say to students or other staff who have experienced imposter syndrome?
Yes, so I would say, firstly, to recognize that this is something that people really do suffer from. It can be a really serious problem, and it's a problem that a lot of people do suffer from. So it's something real, it's something that really causes suffering, but a lot of other people are undergoing it and have been able to succeed despite it. But it's not something that you just see in postgraduates, you see it in postdoctoral fellows, you see it in staff, you see it in really quite senior staff, who, no matter how far they go through their career, can discover this feeling coming back again. And so what I would say is talk to people about it. Because there is this sense that you don't recognize what other people are suffering and what other people are going through, by talking to other people, you may discover that people who you think are just fine have these same worries, the same insecurity about how well they're doing. I'd also encourage people to listen to each other. So to look at your friends, look at your colleagues, and to wonder whether the way that people are behaving or the way they're acting is driven by that insecurity. So people might not recognize that that's what they're suffering from, but they might present it in other ways by saying, oh, well, I can't really submit an abstract to that conference. I can't really submit my paper to that journal, and that might just be imposter syndrome rather than any real reason for having those views.
Okay, so it's sort of an issue that as a community we really need to step up to the plate and say it's here and we need to work on supporting each other through that.
Yeah, so it's here, and it's something that you can help by recognizing in other people.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask next, actually, do either of you have advice for people who think that their friends or colleagues may be suffering from poor mental health and they want to reach out to help? So Amy, could you maybe answer that first?
So I think this question is something we need to be careful with, because obviously we all feel very loyal to our friends. We want to help our friends. No one wants to see their friends and colleagues suffering. And so it is important, if you've not seen someone in 2 weeks, shoot them an email, shoot them a message. Hey, are you okay? Not seeing you in a while. Just checking up on you. But don't take on the emotional burden of a professional therapist in order to basically fix up someone else's life, because you will also have a lot going on in your life and you don't want to be that person's one point of support. Point them in the right direction of other support. Point them in the direction of student services in the school, Nightline. But just be careful. As much as you want to help someone, you aren't going to be their primary saviour.
Okay, and Jonathan, do you
have anything? I'd absolutely echo that. But we have student services in the university that is staffed by professional counsellors, professional therapists, and they have structures in place to support them in supporting students. What people can do is to listen, to give time and space for people when they need support. I mean, I think that there's often a worry that people have about helping people who they see are struggling about, will I say the right thing? Will I make it worse? And there are a few straightforward things you can try to do to avoid that. And the first is, don't make it about you. Don't try and tell people, well, I felt the same thing. I've struggled the same way as you. Listen to what they are saying. The other thing is not to minimize other people's suffering. You don't know what people are feeling. You can listen to them, you can help support them, you can point them at the right sources of support, but do recognize that you don't know what other people's experience is. But beyond those two simple things, I think it's very rare that just listening to someone, just saying, do you want to talk about it, is likely to do harm. Where you can cause problems is if you try to make yourself someone's therapist, try to make yourself the person that they should talk to, rather than offering to help them as they talk to professionals.
Okay, so it's really about being there for them and acknowledging what they're feeling, but making sure that you're looking after yourself and by extension them at the same time, okay? Jonathan, are there any messages that you can give to students who might be unsure of their future in academia or ability to continue in academia because of poor mental health or imposter syndrome?
Yes, so I'd already mentioned a few of these, and maybe we should mention them again. So in academia, there will constantly be forms of feedback, forms of judging of your work. And I think it's important to avoid personalizing it. But on the other side, to approach it with a mindset that says, there are things I can learn, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a judgment on me as having failed to not already know those things. I'd also say, again, the point that as you move through a career in academia, it is faster than you expect for you to be in a position where you have power and responsibility. And to recognize early on that the way you behave, the way that you interact with people, sends messages, and to think consciously about being constructive in how you yourself give feedback, even if it's only with your colleagues, if it's listening to a talk by another student, and how do you give feedback at the end of this. A thing which I've seen a lot of people say about academia is that everyone here is smart. Distinguish yourself by being kind rather than by trying to put people down.
Mm-hmm. Amy, sorry.
One last thing. Yeah, it's just myself.
Yeah, sure.
So just one point to make on imposter syndrome. Something that has helped me as someone who goes through it quite a lot is every day just remind yourself that you've worked really hard to be where you are and you are meant to be where you are. A physicist is someone who looks, thinks, and sounds like you because you are a physicist.
And thank you to both of you for joining us for this very candid discussion.
Thanks once again to Vivian, Glenn, Jonathan and Amy for giving me the privilege of talking to them and having these open discussions. To finish this episode, we're going to hear from Dr. Paul Cruikshank, the wellbeing officer for the school here, and then Miriam, who represents Nightline St. Andrews.
I'm Paul Cruikshank and I'm the wellbeing officer in the School of Physics and Astronomy. Your physics and astronomy degree should be challenging intellectually, but it shouldn't be something that you find really makes your life miserable and causes you massive undue amounts of stress. There's normal stress when you've got a class test the next day or a submission due, but you shouldn't be constantly feeling that you simply can't stay on top of things. The school's very keen for our students to succeed, and part of that is helping students manage their well-being. There are lots of useful university resources. I would encourage anyone who thinks that they're having difficulties to contact student services sooner rather than later. They're the people in the institution that really have expertise in managing difficult personal circumstances. As wellbeing officer, I'm happy to speak to a student or perhaps more usefully listen to a student about anything, as are probably most of my other colleagues in the school. During the day-to-day parts of your degree, you'll have routine contact with lots of my academic colleagues. And again, I would encourage you to make use of them sooner rather than later. So if you're really finding something difficult regarding a module or an assignment for a module, speak to the module coordinator before it gets too messy. Or speak to the module coordinator if you think that in 2 days' time, just before you have to hand it in, things are going to get messy. Dealing with things early, even if all you're doing in dealing with them is telling someone, I'm struggling with this, is by far better than waiting until the weight of stuff that you have to do is piled up, such that it is now extremely difficult to resolve. So at the first sign of trouble, please come and speak to somebody, whether that's myself or whether it's a module coordinator or the director of teaching in the school or one of my more well-being experienced colleagues in student services.
Hello, I'm Miriam and I'm one of the Nightline publicity officers for this year. Nightline is an anonymous and confidential listening service run by students for students in St Andrews. We're open from 8 p.m. to 7 a.m. every single night, and you can get in touch with us by email, you can call us, you can instant message us, or you can Skype call us. There'll be two anonymous volunteers ready to take your call every single evening, and you can call about any problem, whether it's a really, really big problem or just something that seems less important. So for example, you could call us if you had a class test the next day and you were really nervous, or if you've just gone through a tough breakup, or if you want some information. We can also give out information about things like where your exams are, the numbers for people to call, a taxi number. So you never have to feel like you're on your own in St Andrews. It's often really difficult when you have a problem because in the night it seems a lot worse than in the daytime. But there is always someone you can speak to and you never have to struggle on your own. So please reach out if you ever need to chat to anyone in the night because we're always here.
You've been listening to Insight, the University of St Andrews Student Physics Society's podcast. I was your host, Samuel Lavery. Thanks to the wonderful academics of St Andrews, join us in the future as we learn more of the people making our education. This podcast was produced by myself and our podcast producer, Sabrina Keating. To find out more about the Physics Society and what we do, please find us on Facebook or Google St Andrews Physics Society or our website. Goodbye.